You're listening to OK Boomer with Ralph Odierna and Victoria Greenwood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome back to OK Boomer with my co-host Victoria Greenwood and our special guest who's in my top two of all-time guests, her very own mother, Sheila Lussiere. I'd like to apologize to everybody today because I couldn't promote the show. I had to have Victoria do it for me.
Yep.
I am in Facebook jail for calling some idiot ignorant.
Good for you, dude.
Yeah. It should be a blanket term for everyone.
I broke my Facebook I shall not go on pledge just for you, Ralph.
I'm sorry, but how, if you call an idiot ignorant, that's not bullying. It's actually being polite.
I called a bully a bully, and I was in Facebook jail, so.
There you go. And before we forget, our sponsor, Pineapple Hill Saloon, is the one that makes this show run. They are on Moore Park and Van Nuys. They are located behind the In-N-Out Burger at the end of the shopping center. Please go in and support Angela Marsden. It's a local establishment, and it serves the community and did so during COVID. So please go there and support them because they support us.
Yes.
Sheila, welcome back.
Hey, Mom.
Hey,
what's
up? Thank you. And what an honor. I'm like in the top two, huh?
You're in my top two.
Wow.
My top one is Angela because she pays for the show.
I understand. Yeah.
Sheila, last time, I really feel like we didn't get to know you well enough last time you were on the show. And what I didn't realize, it came up out of nowhere in last week's show. One of our guests, Lori, was talking about having a daughter. And Victoria says, yeah, my mom had three by the time she was 23.
Is that
accurate?
25. I had three. But if you
am I aging you down?
Here's the thing.
You're actually aging yourself up.
Yeah, I'll tell you the truth. I was 25 by the time I had three, but the rest of the world probably thinks I was 23. But anyway,
that's fair enough. But yet, and because you and I are similar in the age, and we're 80s kids, mm-hmm. It didn't seem to affect your life at all. You still led a great life, a fun life, happy life. And by the way, your kids are amazing. And one of the things I've always said is you can't fake great kids. So
that's true.
It really speaks to you as a mom and the influence you had in their life. But how did it feel to be on the Sunset Strip at 25 with three kids? And especially because you were coming into your own as a woman at 25 as well.
Well, it's crazy because I started hanging out on the Sunset Strip by myself at the age of like 12 and 13. So by the age of 25, I already thought I'd seen it and done it all. Yeah. I had no idea because I was so young that I didn't know. Do you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, when I was a kid, I used to go to a club called like Seven Seas, which we called the Seven Sleas. And then it's like that was Hollywood was hot, which I wasn't supposed to go there, but... Then Sunset Strip, I just brought my kids with me.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Victoria, I dress her up like a tuxedo jacket with like little pants and little high tops. And she was so cute. And
was.
Yeah. I mean,
she still is.
I can't dress her up anymore.
I was fishing. Yeah, you can't.
Because we're not fishing.
And the reason I'm asking is because when we were in high school, 13, mm-hmm. that was the music of the 70s. By the time we hit 19, 20, 21, the 80s.
How old are you?
I'm 58.
Okay, you're older than me.
Yeah, that's what I said. But
just putting it out there.
I
a
said
few good
that.
Years
go.
Plus one.
I said that.
I'm in my early 50s. Right. I will say that. I don't like to.
But the music had changed dramatically when you turned 25 from the time you were 12 and 13 hanging out on
right.
the strip. You know?
You mean like as far as the things that were being performed? Because I know I know my mom may have dated or been the girlfriend of those guys, but you liked...
Rock and roll.
Yeah. I mean, you liked, like, cool. I'm not saying they're not cool. But
I liked cooler rock than they were.
Yeah. I mean, you always say Van Halen's your favorite band.
Yeah, true.
Well, that's in the 80s. That's not the 70s.
But no.
Faces
sure.
is my favorite,
okay.
which is 70s.
Right.
But here's the thing. I grew up in the music business as a child because my mom's best friend, who lived in Los Angeles, was her neighbor in San Diego's mother was partners with Dick Clark. So as a small little girl, even 4 years old, she worked on the American Bandstand. So I was always around musicians. My mom was a go-go dancer at the Hullabaloo.
Oh, my gosh.
And on the TV show. So I tell my mom, hey, it's your fault that I like hot men in leather pants.
I wrote grandma a letter trying to be like, one day I was in high school and like trying to relate to my grandma because mm-hmm. I knew she was like a go-go dancer and she like partied and like with the dudes from
the Beach Boys
and like and I was like, grandma, that's so cool. Like I'm trying to like relate to her, like why I like musicians or why I like music. And I remember I asked her if she got my letter and she's like, yeah, I got it. And I'm like, and she's like, yeah, it was great. And I was like, Grandma, talk to me here,
you
man.
Know, it's, because it's just a given. That's a way of life. Do you know what I'm saying? And my she mom denies a lot had of her heart broken by some musician, I don't know who, from somewhere, not California. And she went back to San Diego and just did not want to perform or be part of this town again. And she also was a model in, like, the beach movies, you know?
Right.
And she didn't do acting so much as she was, like, the pretty... She looks like... back then, she looked like Natalie Wood. So nothing like us.
No,
so
yeah.
So real pretty, petite, gorgeous mom. So.
Right. So now that... adds an extra layer to it because your mom was in the industry. Because I wanted to ask you, what was the main attraction? Was it the music, the business, the performers, you know, or just the glitz and glamour of it all?
Well, my mom's best friend, Brenda, who I mentioned, was an animal trainer, and she was married to somebody in the band Three Dog Night. So I would go on the road with them. So I liked getting into Disneyland for free.
Right.
And, like, the fun of being with the other kids, like Radon Chong, her uncle, it was the drummer in Three Dog Night. So it was crazy. You know, it was fun times in the 70s.
I mean, I make the joke that, like, you wouldn't get along with anyone who was quote unquote normal. You know, I feel like your interests and your level of intelligence is that of a creative because you were raised around it. So the people you get along with and the people that you resonate with tend to be that way as well. Or like even, you know, some of the business people that you've dated. I say business, they're like business people. I just don't want to name names unless you want to. But
musicians are
both.
Okay.
Billionaires
and musicians. Which ones?
But I'm saying
not my fault.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying though. I'm saying that you get along with them on an intellectual level, and that is something that you can't force with normal people. I've tried doing it as well. It's
the thing is that okay. So from my experience. When I was a kid, I rode horses. So in this lifestyle of, you know, music and everything in the 70s, people had horses. So I could exercise their horses. So it was not uncommon for me to be at, like, at John Davidson's house exercising his horse while Kenny Rogers was playing tennis. And, you know, whoever else, Lily Tomlin was there teaching me how to cook.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's just the way I grew up. I didn't know anything different. And except for San Diego, which was Grandma, who's Native American, on a farm that we... You know, weren't allowed to swear. I had to wear a dress. I couldn't wear pants.
Yeah.
We grew our own vegetables and had our own animals there. So it was very normal to go back home to that. I think back here again became normal for me too. And then my mom's other best friend, who I call my aunt, my aunt Kitty, who married the owner of Carnation Milk and lived in Bel Air. So I was kind of like,
yeah, you know Kitty, dude.
So imagine being raised by these two women, Brenda and Kitty.
Yeah.
So I had Kitty, who was very strict, by the way. There's no drinking and drugs and no this and that, but we had to work all the time. It was like, okay, Sheila, get a commercial. Okay, this is stressful. Get a commercial. Do this, do that. I'm like, okay, I'll just get up and do that. Drive to Carl's Market and buy me some cottage cheese when you're 14, can't even drive. But I drove that Mercedes anyway. Yeah. I'm not a quitter.
Yeah.
So it's just, I guess it's just the way I grew up.
Well, and it was, presented to you as this is your normal.
Yeah, exactly.
How about Kitty going from Bel Air to Podunk?
Carlsbad?
No, Podunk, New Mexico.
Oh, yeah, Carlsbad, New Mexico. She hates it, too. I'm still working on trying to get that jewel back that she lost in the 80s, which is something else.
That's
I was there. I'm the one that made her go to the party.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
it's hard.
It is. One of the things, and I was talking about the differences of music. You know, the 70s is what we know as classic rock. You know,
right.
Whether it's Zeppelin, Stones, ELO, the Cars, David Bowie.
Thank you so much.
And then in the 80s, it started going a little pop rock. But then we had the hair band explosion. And then into the 90s, we had the grunge movement. Where do you fit in as far as
definitely most, not grunge
as most comfortable?
Well, what do you mean by that? But what I like to listen to or the people that I
both.
Know?
You're the 80s, early 80s.
Here's the thing. I think she's going to tell me what I like. that's kids for you. I'm not a hair band person, really, per se. They were my friends growing up, and I would go to the shows with an open mind and, you know, sometimes leave, you know, with my ears feeling abused because they weren't so great. The 70s people, like Van Halen rocks, okay?
Right.
You see a Van Halen concert, your life has changed forever. They were tight and amazing. And you go see a Poison concert, your life has changed forever, but for a different reason. You know, I loved them too, but they were horrible. And JD, my ex, was an amazing singer. He could sing anything. It was beautiful.
Yeah, I used to have arguments with my friends back then because they were
getting hot.
It was the concerts I just didn't want to go to.
Yeah.
Hair band may have had its, I don't know, it's, to me, the lyrics of the 70s are what made music.
Yeah.
And yeah. and that's what...
Although some of those lyrics are odd, too. It's got to be a couple of things for, you know, it's got to be this, the chord
The chord progression, in the 70s exactly. was a lot more of an elegant progression. They go into
melodic
and power chords, and it progressively becomes more of that until you hit the 90s, and it's nothing but power chords.
Right.
Yeah, and some parts of the 90s were horrible because...
I love the 90s.
Yeah, well, you're born in 1990.
What up, dude?
But, the music was just so angry.
Give me grunge all
the time. I'm not angry.
Same. But she talks about how angry I am all the time.
I want to hear music that takes me somewhere, you know? And it could be a Pink Floyd record.
Oh, you know, it's, I got into an argument with a conversation with a member that you know as well. And I'm not going to shut him out because then he'll feel cool. But he was saying that like how hard it is to date moms. Because of how obsessed they are with their kids. And I'm like, those are just bad parents. I'm like, I remember my mom having long-term relationships. And my mom always, having a different relationship with us than with the person she's dating and with herself. Because that's what a healthy person does. And and it was never like, of course I had opinions about boyfriends that you had. And I was definitely a dick to a handful of them. But,
a few of them.
Yeah. Which we laugh about now.
Were you a relationship chick?
Oh, yeah.
100%.
I love how
I've never had a one-night stand.
And it comes right out of her mouth.
Yeah, 100%.
Welcome.
I used to say, if you bone me, bodyguard. You own me. Right. Ew. You bone me, you own me. Sorry. It's just that I'm not the girl that wants to be there for a moment, you know? And sometimes, you know, in my later life, I can say there's been some situations that I would want to run from, and I have.
Thank God.
Yeah, it gets a little weird. Like, I'm single right now, and I don't even know what I want to do. It's like...
Be single, babe. Be single.
It gets boring. I can only talk to myself so much. But it's just like... It's a confusing time because who do you go date?
Yourself.
Please. I've always dated myself from the beginning anyways.
Whatever.
I mean, I don't have a problem with that.
Whatever. But the point is that you always made it a very clear,
separate.
Healthy, separate thing. And because his whole argument was that like the moms are always obsessed with their kids. I'm like, my mom wasn't obsessed with us. My mom... explain things to us like adult, like individuals, but not in a weird way. It was always like you explain consequences of people's behavior, why things are important, you know.
Right.
You treated us like we were going to be adults.
Right.
So it was like the relationships that you had with people weren't unhealthy because of that. I'm like, this sounds like you just date a whole bunch of unhealthy people.
Sounds like,
bro.
Yeah. Being a mom, and also it's not like you sit there and you go, hey, I'm a mom. That's not the first thing
that
comes
up. And then that's what you keep me around, so then I can be...
That's later. That's when Victoria comes in.
I'm a dick to the creepy dudes that hit on my
mom.
I do it on purpose. Woman who gave birth to me.
I am convinced that in life, you can control anything and everything you want with one exception.
What's up?
Attraction. And things, that's the only thing you don't have control over, who you're attracted to.
Sure.
It doesn't mean you have to date that person, but you're going to have that natural attraction to that person because you just can't control that.
Right.
Music or musicians, your natural attraction?
Well, you know, we're talking about attraction. I think Rudolf Schenker from the Scorpions is one of the best, the hottest guys I've dated, who I'm very attracted to. But when he first asked me out, I'm like, I'm not going out with you. Seriously? Why? And I was like thinking to myself, what are you doing? But I just really didn't think about it. I didn't think about dating. Like, I wasn't like, hey, I need a date or I'm going to date. It's just things happen.
It's not about that. I'm just trying to figure out where your natural attraction to. Because it could be something about musicians, whether it's their artistry or just
It is that, though.
If they suck.
Okay.
I won't mention a few rock stars invited me. And I brought. I'm like, oh, my God, he's fucking
so
horrible.
Bad.
Run, guys. My ears. It's like, and then you can't fake liking their music.
Well, there's a thing I think... I wrote this whole poem about it, about like the genetic disease of liking musicians and how it was like handed down to me. And, you know, when you're a part of music, like my mom can, you write, like you've written songs, like you
I
understand
wrote a lot of songs
music.
With like Janie, for Alice Cooper and different artists.
So there's a part of you that is, to a degree, a musician in that way.
Right.
But also there's something.
A poet.
Yes, I was going to say there's something poetic about musicians. And when they're tuned into that, it is attractive because we as empaths and creatives are drawn to vulnerability to a degree.
Right.
So it's if someone can express themselves poetically, it's very attractive. also, and they have to do it well.
They're also most, very vulnerable too.
Well, I was about to say that.
And, yeah. And it's like an experience that you can share.
Yes.
Have you ever dated someone or gone on a date with someone who seemed like they're on the date with themselves?
Yeah, most of the time.
Yeah, those are the people I don't like. Those are the people I don't like.
Yeah.
I like the ones that are like experiencing everything with you, whether it's the interaction with the people that you are drinking or song. That's what musicians do.
I mean, and that's why I think music
they experience
is,
everything
you
from
share
every
it.
Level of it. You know, from the tactile point to the, you know, it's everything. It's all your senses.
It's interesting because I think modern day musicians, more so than musicians of the 40s and 50s and 30s, are more vulnerable and have a lower self-esteem because I think there's more poetry in them. You go back to the 30s, 40s, and 50s, most of those singers didn't write their lyrics.
No.
There was a poet or a lyricist that wrote them for them. So Sinatra never wrote a song. Dean Martin never wrote a song.
Right. Her grandfather, the drummer Mars, played during that time, but he was still a vulnerable,
I mean, that's
creative,
the thing.
Interesting person,
but that's
too,
like
though.
Saying you're an actor, and because I take a play from someone else, and I can put myself into the words that I didn't write and understand them emotionally and convey that emotion. It's the same thing if you're a good musician. Even if you didn't write the lyrics.
Kenny Rogers didn't write his songs, okay? Islands of the Stream, you think he, I mean, he could resonate that.
He's a storyteller.
Right.
Exactly.
He's absolutely a storyteller. Absolutely. But it's just that most musicians are poets. That's where lyrics come from.
Right.
Where back in the 30s and 40s, they really weren't. They were performers.
Sure.
You know?
Unless you're Irish. I mean, the folk music, what do you think that was? They told stories there. Jazz musicians did.
Billy Joel is an Irish folk teller.
Who I used to hang out with when I was 12.
Of course.
And he lived by Jack in the Box up in Laurel Canyon.
If you listen to his songs, they're Irish folk tales.
Seven Seasons.
That's
seven
right.
Seven Sleazes.
Yeah. So... And I think that's where that comes from. I mean, your favorite artist of all time.
Bowie.
Yeah, no.
Well, hers is Bowie.
No, it's Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh, I thought you...
I was like, what kind of... Yeah,
I'm like, who is this man?
I was like, Bowie. What kind of trash are you trying to say about me, Ralph?
But am I correct?
Yeah. That's her favorite poet.
I love this.
Look at you guys answering questions for me now.
I talk to you, your mom answers. I talk to you, and Victoria answers. This is awesome.
Yeah, but that is her favorite poet.
Right. Look at the troubled life he led.
Yeah.
You know,
so what are you trying to say, Ralph? That we like troubled people?
Yes.
I think poets do.
You know.
No, no. Not that you like troubled people. I think poets in general, and that goes to songwriters. There's something, I don't want to say dark, but there's something inside them that is troubling.
Yes. Well, Rudolph, by the way, when I would see his concert from the beginning to the end, he would want to critique it afterwards. Was I good? What did I do? Was there anything wrong? And I'm not talking for 20 minutes. I'm talking for 2 hours sometimes. And I used to say that dating a rock star is like dating the most insecure person in the world.
Right.
Because even though they seem to be secure, they are very insecure because they want to be heard for their music and the way that they wrote it. And maybe sometimes they're not because interpretation is to oneself. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know?
I get it.
So in some of his songs, God only knows what he meant. But
going there, I also think that type of person who has that type of talent has that type of DNA that leads to addiction. Dylan Thomas literally drank himself to death.
That's
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously you can go into the argument of addiction being, you know, part genetic, part environment, which is something that I had to learn about.
Also, but being bored too,
but to a degree. But I think when I had this conversation with some other people, when you are vulnerable and you have to tap into your vulnerability for creative sake, you tend to attract people that will want to prey on that vulnerability and will supply you with the things to keep you submissive so they can benefit. They're very parasitic.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's very
parasitic.
By the way,
in the dating scene, we call that an angle shooter.
Oh, really?
No.
What's that mean?
It's a guy that's walking through the bar. He's looking for the gal that's probably by herself and has had one or too many cocktails.
Gross.
And
pig.
And that's what, exactly. And that's...
That's why I know women should go to a bar by herself.
Yeah, I know. I'm like,
how gross is that?
Well, sad life. My mom used to take me to a bar and when I was a little kid. And what did
that
I,
way she wasn't by herself.
Yeah.
No. I bring my kids on dates.
And instead, what would happen, Mom, when people try to buy you a drink?
Well, let's just put it straight. It wasn't a bar. It would be like the Roxy, the whiskey, which happens
the
to be a bar
Troubadour.
With live, of course, live entertainments there. Uh-huh. I just remember I was raised this
just
way,
paint
too.
The scene, Mom.
Okay. Victoria's all dressed up. I'm dressed up. We're standing there watching probably her dad play. And her dad. And like... The waitress will come and say, hey, I have a man over there, and they wave. He would like to buy you a drink. And Victoria's like, send him away. No. And they're like, excuse me? I'm like, he wants to get her Shirley Temple too. She's like, nope, never. And I mean, that would happen 4 or 5 times a night. And she wouldn't even turn to her.
And what did
turn
I say?
Head. I'm talking 3, 4, 5. She's like,
I say, we don't take drinks from strangers, men.
Yeah. And then that was it. But I honestly.
Still the same, dude. Still the same person.
Who needs to take a drink from someone when you can buy your own, okay? I buy my own drink.
5 years
this
old.
This is a problem. Sometimes I'll go somewhere and somebody will sit next to me and they won't leave me alone.
And then I come I in and I go, hey, mom.
Drink.
Right.
And then I'm literally like
I remember when I went
a
out
rabid
with,
beast.
Remember when I went out with Ryan Roxy for a while and we met him at the bar that
yeah,
time?
Yeah, it took him a moment fun. For me to like him. And Ryan I think Roxy, he's actually, he's a really cool dude.
Yeah, he was sweet.
He's a really cool dude.
Yeah. But yeah. It reminds me of being at the bar and then him going, would you mind if I dated your mother? She was actually nice to him.
Yeah, he's cute.
Do you have the same relationship with your boys as you do, Victoria?
It depends. Kate, trick well, question. Everybody has a different personality. Honestly, Keaton is easygoing. Casey's just no bullshit.
Right. He's
and then like, what am I, angry?
It depends on the day.
Angry
she's
and sarcastic.
Different. She's a Pisces, so it changes with the moon. And we just had a full moon.
You're going to have a daughter-in-law soon. I just realized that.
I was
that.
Like, what the hell are you talking about? Yeah, I was wait, like, what? Oh, I thought it was like a child or something.
Didn't Keaton just get engaged?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
My
he
son
did.
Keaton is engaged.
That'll make her your
girl.
Daughter-in-law.
Yeah.
Lindsay. She's already my daughter, you know?
Yeah.
She's a good kid.
Lindsay loves cooking and stuff. And
an amazing cook.
Really good. And it was like either Thanksgiving or Christmas, and you like looked at me to help. My cousin Blaine's there.
It was both Thanksgiving and
Christmas.
Whatever.
And
I made dinner.
And she's like, come in and help me in the kitchen. I'm like, ask your new daughter to help you. I'm going to sit with the dudes and eat some cheese.
Here's one bad thing that I did do is I had housekeepers when Victoria was growing up because I had to pay for housekeepers to keep the house and my children a certain way so I could work and take care of them all. So this kid didn't even do the dishes. She didn't know how to use a dishwasher, a vacuum at 16. I was like, wait a minute.
Not true, but.
She did not do them.
How old were they when you became officially a single mom?
I was always a single mom, pretty much. But I was pregnant with Keaton, left his father pregnant, went back to him for a while, left him again, and lived on my own. And it was really nice, I realized, to have your own house, and they could have their own house, and then I could bring our families together. And I married Victoria's dad when I was, what, 20?
I don't know.
One, something like that. And I had Victoria. And then I had Casey 3 years later, and I was always going... He was an alcoholic, so that was really hard for me. I didn't understand the point of drinking at home. Like, we're not at a gig right now. What are you drinking for? And I really learned, you know, the hard way what alcoholism was and just trying to help someone that can't help themselves. And so it was better for him to move out.
She divorced that fool, went back to
Kenny
Jr.,
and I went back to him for a long
on
time.
On and off forever.
But I was dated, you know... I was dated Alan Thicke. I dated a few different actors, and I was with Rudolph Schenker for a long time. And I don't know. It's like, what was the question anyway? What?
I asked, when were you solely
single.
On your own?
So I was. I paid the
in between those things. Yeah, you were always
paid
financially independent.
I paid my own bills. So sometimes, like Kenny Rogers, actually Keaton's grandfather paid for him to go to school. Mm-hmm. And when I told him one time, I wrote him a long letter when Keaton was like 1 and a half, saying, "None of my friends have kids. I don't know what to do. You know, can you help me?" And he appreciated what I said, and he paid for Keaton's school. And then when Kenny Jr. could afford it, he switched over and he started paying for it. And Kenny Jr. paid for Victoria's school, and I paid for Casey. So we kind of split things, and I paid my own stuff. And then I helped Kenny do his music company, Planet One. And he bought me a car and paid all kinds of things. You know what I mean? So
he's
still really close to
my
me.
Dad.
And, yeah, he's a good guy. Victoria, she didn't put oil in her Jaguar, and she broke down off the side of the freeway. I'm like, Victoria!
To be fair...
No oil, no water.
Was that actually me, or was that when I got an oil change?
No, that was late. That was
okay, never
time.
Mind.
This was
that
her.
Was you.
She,
who wants to put oil in the car? It's dirty.
She said to me, I go down there to meet her with some musician or somebody I'm dating, I have to get the car towed, and she goes, don't worry, Pops will buy me a new car. And guess what? He did. I got the Jaguar for a long time, though. That was a bitchin' car. I donated it. I wish I still had
people
it.
People always said I was rich when I drove that, and it was very unfortunate to break the news to them. It was a Vanderplas.
Yeah, well, it was actually... Kobe Broccoli had bought it for his assistant, Rose, and it was a British one that was not sold here, typically, because it was from there.
It was
a really
green.
Gorgeous car.
It was cool.
Yeah.
It was cool. It was a good time in my life. Yeah. But yeah, there was one time they didn't put oil in my car. When I got an oil change, and my car...
That's another
in flames.
Car you had.
I was driving.
What car was that? I can't remember what it was called.
I don't know.
It was a nice car. But yeah, she was trying to be all grown up, went to the place that I had gone to for like car washes and stuff. And I thought, She calls me from the mall in Woodland Hills, and I'm like, Victoria, wait a minute, what'd you just do? She's like, I had an oil change. I'm like, they didn't put oil in your car. She's like, Mom, don't be ridiculous.
Well, I called you crying already.
I knew what it was.
Did you go back there and get it taken care of?
Well, they had to pay us a lot of money. Right. It was Infiniti. She owned an Infiniti at that
moment. My car was ruined because it caught on fire.
Right.
It was bad. It was bad.
So my dad had to sue this place, basically, and they ended up having to buy me a new car.
Yeah, we basically didn't have to sue them. We just had to have our attorney call. But they knew they were wrong because I immediately walked in there. And then they also had a car wash.
It's terrifying.
I said, by the way, can I have 24 car washes for free, too? And they gave me a buck.
Did you do that?
Hello!
Jesus, you're so loud.
Sorry. Hell yeah. Wow. Of course I did.
I apologize to all the viewers at home. Sorry. These screens
why wouldn't I ask for that? You know what I mean? I mean, they broke your car and almost killed
Jesus Christ.
You.
There are dogs barking 6 blocks away.
Sorry,
right,
yes,
now.
Mom.
Well, Kenny always gets the checks from the insurance and I get nothing.
Okay. Oh. It's a part of your arrangement.
What are you doing with your life now? I know you had the fires up north, but you were gonna buy a home.
Yeah, I was up there to buy a home, and then I was in escrow for a while, and the home ended up having a roofing problem and a fungus problem, and then the fires hit, and I still had my furniture and everything sent there. So I've just been in a real moment of hell for 4 months, 5 months, something like that. There's triple-digit weather there now with the global
It's pretty climate. Horrible.
It's pretty bad. And I really wanted to help my mom and be with my mom, and I realized I could fly back and forth.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah. I mean, you sell stuff, so you can advertise that.
Yeah, I make jewelry still, and I have my Etsy page, and I have lots of stuff. So I do my jewelry, and then I just recently spoke to Tommy Ray Brown today, James Brown's widow, and this lawsuit was settled after all this time for, you know, his estate. So she and I are going to go back and do our projects together that we had, you know, and finish them. And since then, she's learned how to edit and stuff. So I'm going to go to London soon again.
Is it all shot?
Yeah. So thank God. And sad enough, most people in our documentary, Prince, Michael Jackson, they're not here any longer. Even Kevin Dubrow did it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I sit here and I think, wow, what a time in life that I just thought was going to be forever.
Yeah.
The interviews are really good.
Victoria worked on it as a kid. So the key.
My job was to get the celebrities to sign releases.
Yeah, she did a good job.
I'm just going to throw it out there. And I'm not just saying it because you're Victoria's mom and you're my top two favorite guests, but you live a fascinating life. So
thanks.
Why a documentary on somebody else and not yourself?
You know, I don't know if I was that open to it because I didn't realize that it was so interesting in my life, to tell you the truth, until more recently when I've been other places. I did start writing a book a few years ago, and the computer was stolen from storage. So I think it was like the little girl that grew up above the hullabaloo was the beginning of it. And I just kind of outlined the way that I grew up and everything after that. So I think I'll get back to that, you know?
People are fascinated with the lives of people in the entertainment industry. If you go back to the movie Almost Famous.
Yeah, but, of course.
But from the perspective of the Rolling Stone writer who was 14 or 15 years old at the time, that was the fascinating part. It was the perspective of someone looking in, right, not necessarily being inside. You have that perspective. You looked in on so many different acts, so many different people. And not only that, in different like classes of music, from Van Halen to the hair bands, you know.
To Prince,
yeah,
too.
You have insight on country music that it's really kind of wild. You have a fascinating story. It's too bad you don't have a writer for a daughter.
Jesus. Well, Keaton's a writer, but you know, whenever I ask my kids,
yeah, she throws it away. I'm not a real writer in her eyes, dude.
To do work for me, they don't do it. Although she did ask for some of my notes, the Greenwood notes recently, and you said you would make a story. Like, you asked me if
I did. I did ask you. I did have her, I wanted her to record just stories, that way I could write them in a thing.
I used to have Janie do that. But
well, because I wanted my play. So essentially, the mom character is very loosely based on you, Mom. Not completely. She has a very hard time. She never saw it, so she doesn't understand how brilliant this character is.
He brought me the script, and I wouldn't even read it.
He didn't. Yeah, and you should have. Because
they told me not to.
Okay, I don't care. So regardless.
Did you see the play?
Unfortunately, I did not.
Okay. But other people saw it, and
I had just met Victoria at that time.
Okay. And a ton of people rave about how it's fantastic. So,
well, I'm proud of
Craig Titley.
Yeah.
Endeavor.
So Craig Titley, who is a professional writer for Hollywood, film and TV, said he went in there. I mean, I think he had a date, and he wasn't expecting anything, but he wanted to support Victoria. He says he was engrossed in it. He thought it was so good.
He compared me to Neil Simon and Neil LaBute. Yeah.
Wow. See?
And that's the thing. So, like, what I wanted to do is I wanted to do two different things. One, do something solely that's like an autobiography thing, and I'm like a ghostwriter for my mom. And then also I wanted to take certain stories that would be relevant and make the play, my play itself, like into an episodic and give flashbacks.
Like from your POV?
Yeah. And I also, like, if I was to pitch this, I would want to play the mom in the flashbacks. Like,
you
I already told Greg that.
You're at the perfect age to play your mom.
I know.
And you guys actually look a lot alike.
Oh, God.
I know.
There are some photos of you at her age.
Yep.
It's wild how much you guys look alike.
Yeah, but and you have to understand this too, right? It's like there's people that within my play that are mixed characters or moments or things that I might have said to Chaz or, like little...
Chaz West from Bonham. One of my good friends.
Yeah, I was a fucking dick to him. Sorry, Chaz. He's probably watching.
Chaz, we're sorry.
He watches on it on Facebook. I was so mean to him.
He'd want a piggyback ride and like
beat the shit out of him, dude. I'd smack him. I hated him because in my mind... Because
I wanted...
Well, I wanted
you.
I remember being 6 years old and sitting down, and I was like, "If my mom's not going to be with Kenny, then she's going to be with Rudolph. Who the fuck is this guy?" And I just would be, I'd be like, "Chad," like in front of my mom, I'd be like, "Chaz, can I have a piggyback ride?"
Yeah, and then beat him up.
And then my mom would like turn her back and start smacking him in the head. And he was just like, I remember when I turned 21, he came to my birthday party, and this motherfucker, I made a joke about him. He goes to London for like 6 months, and he comes back English, which is my, I'm like, really? And he goes,
he Victoria, grew up in New Jersey.
Victoria, when you were a little girl, you were such a little bitch. And I'm like, at least
but
I,
she wasn't.
I'm like, just, at least I didn't people. Change my fucking ethnicity in like 6 months, bro. Like all of a sudden, you're English.
God bless.
Yeah, he's funny though. He's a great guy. But yeah.
You're Chuck. Such a little bitch.
I'm like drunk. I'm 21. I'm
I probably
like
should have slapped
drinking
him.
Sex on the beaches.
Yeah.
I'm like next to my dad and my mom. I'm like, what?
At least you were 21.
Yeah, I mean, that's when we had my birthday at the Rainbow.
Yeah, I remember. We had the whole upstairs.
Yeah, it was
fun. They gave us the whole upstairs.
I got carried out.
Yeah.
Because I was so drunk.
And put in your limo.
I love that the Rainbow has AA meetings up on the third floor.
And that's where I got wasted for my first legal time.
We won't even say what I've done there.
Yeah, anyway, thank you.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah,
I went there the
times.
Other day to order a pizza to go, just so I could. I saw Michael Maglieri, who's such a sweet person, and Wendy Dio was there. It was nice.
Do you know, I have to find the article, but there was a mafia hit on Mario.
No way.
Just after he opened up the Rainbow.
Really?
One of them taken out.
That's rude.
Yeah.
That's good rude.
Man. He's a good man.
They don't have escargot anymore. It's a tragedy, really.
I'm sure we could
ask had a great steak, though.
They did. Well, he had, you know.
Like anchovies.
You love
that was a great Italian restaurant before it was the Rainbow.
Yeah, but it was something else. I forget what it was called.
Because the reason they call it Rainbow is that is where Judy Garland and Eddie Fisher got engaged.
So
Mario bought the Italian restaurant, Via Notte, it was called.
That's
Via
it,
Notte. When he bought it in tribute to Judy Garland, called it the Rainbow.
Oh, wow.
And he came from Chicago.
There you go.
That's right. But, people used to call it the Rainbow Barbies. There's one in New York City.
I always try to tell them that's not the same place.
Right. Always do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. Or the Rainbow Room.
Oh, the Rainbow Room.
They try to say the Rainbow Room, and that's New York.
Because that's what's in New York City.
I did New York and L.A. And Nashville. I mean, I did all those places, lived in them all. So
how'd you like Nashville?
I couldn't wait to leave. Stupid, dude.
Oh, really?
My kids did well there for a while. Keaton hosted the news. He was 10. Victoria was 6.
I won some award.
Yeah, she won an award. She was honored by the mayor. I mean, who could go to Nashville for a short amount of time and have all the success? Me and my kids. She did this whole thing about, it was kind of sad though. She did this thing about uniting the world, but underneath her picture was a picture of her dad and me and all of us drawn under it. So I knew what she really meant. And she was honored by the mayor there.
Welcome to Victoria's Art.
Grand Ole Opry's on my bucket list.
We've been there. You know, Keaton's grandpa played. And I remember dancing. The Ryman Auditorium, actually, they cut out part of the stage and put it in the new Grand Ole Opry. So you can stand on the old Ryman stage. So I was like, doing a little jig.
Well, now,
there.
Yeah. Now, I mean, they had the floods and stuff there, so I don't know.
Oh, it's okay.
They had to redo it.
No, it's still okay.
I heard.
I talked to people from there like every day almost.
I don't know. I cried because there was no ocean, so that's where I'm at.
Well, we had the Cumberland River.
Right.
Gross.
And I took her to the science class. Well, when we live anywhere, I look at it as a place to visit like you would a tourist, because we all are kind of visiting wherever we are. So I took my kids to all the things to do there, and she learned about bluegrass music.
Yep.
And that's when Bill Monroe, he was still living, and he passed away during that time. But it was pretty cool, like, to be able to be in the thick of that there and then come back home.
I have a very good buddy, Michael Rogers, and he was a singer back in the 80s, I think. He had a couple of pop songs. but people would ask him about his dad, and he's like, who do you mean? And like, Kenny, right? He's like, no, my dad is a country singer, but he's Jimmy Rogers.
Oh, well, I knew Jimmy Rogers was, too.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But, no, I like Nashville. I've been there a bunch of times. I've not been to the Grand Ole Opry to see a show, but that is on the bucket list.
I like Opryland during Christmas time. It's really beautiful with all the lights. Do you remember that?
Going kind to of, yeah. Lights?
And I want to go to Dollywood, too.
Yeah.
I haven't been to Dollywood.
Isn't
need
that
to
in
do
Pigeon
that.
Forge, Tennessee?
Yes, it's in Pigeon Forge, yeah. I would like to go there. It'd be nice
Tennessee.
If like, we could go with Dolly or
something.
I want to go with Dolly.
Because Dolly's got to be in her 80s now.
No, she's not. I don't think so. I think she's in her late 70s, but then who am I?
Oh, really? She's only in her 70s?
I think so. She started young.
I don't know. I'm down.
She looks like
yeah, that's right. Every country singer
so
back then started at 9.
Pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, that's how long it takes to make it.
Yeah, they redid Dollyland, too. They did a whole bunch of stuff with Dollywood.
You know that she helped the Moderna. She started or helped, you know, fund the Moderna shot.
She's people underestimate how powerful she is in business. Forget music. You know, Dollywood was
the
her.
The books things too that she does. She does this books like gives books to
children
schools.
Who can't afford to buy them.
Right.
Yeah.
She's done, and she's written more songs than anyone. I think I used to know Sandy Gallen, her manager as a kid. Very close to Kenny Rogers, and obviously Dolly is close to Kenny Rogers, and I'd see her all the time, but she always amazes me still, you know?
No, she's absolutely talented.
And sweet, too, and funny, and beautiful.
And that just kicked off on Outlaw Radio on Saturday. Matt was talking about you. He was out of nowhere, this gal plays the banjo. He goes, I can't tell you how much I love the banjo.
That's a great instrument.
She can do it.
It's a great instrument. I
may have to have you and Keaton up here again, and his guitar and your banjo.
I am, could do Travis Creep's Keaton.
I know, we're doing it again. Records, yeah. Now we're going to get Casey to be the drummer.
Oh, well, hello. He should be.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I mean, I went from playing a lot to not playing at all to playing a little bit to not playing at all, so it's like I'm going to go back to playing. I just got my nails off, so now I can.
Yeah, she can. She puts on these little, what are those called, those things?
Finger picks?
The
yeah, finger picks. They're amazing. She can do
most
that.
Banjo players use them, right?
Unless you're like strumming or, I mean, there's different techniques for things, but traditionally, yes, everyone wears finger picks. However, my thumb pick is like a special made thumb pick for me that's like made out of plastic and metal. Traditionally, they're only metal. But
why do you have it out of plastic as
I
well?
Found it at NAMM. I like the sound of it. And because I have a smaller thumb because I'm a girl, they don't make metal picks that fit my thumb.
You never saw my grandmother's thumb.
There you go, yeah. They don't make.
I don't even remember what my grandmother's thumb looks like.
Yeah, they don't make picks that fit your thumb properly.
Oh,
and like the metal cuts into it. So this is like a really light version of that. And the sound quality, is just it sounds
better.
They
should endorse you.
I know, it's called ProPick. ProPick, if you're out there.
Oh, yeah.
I would order them online like a psychopath.
Is a banjo four strings?
There's different string, like there can be four strings, but mine's five. There's also six, but yeah.
There's a six string banjo?
They make them. You'd be surprised.
Hey, they make basses with just two strings even.
I know. Me and Blaine were talking about that.
Yeah, it's
crazy.
The
President of the United States, it's a band that me and my cousin saw live, and like the guitar player has a three string guitar, and there's like the bass player has two strings.
But they're amazing still.
Yeah.
It's gotta be a.
They're called the President of the United States. The Peaches
song. But the
two-string,
you
just gotta look it up, dude.
No, but it's gotta be a very deep sound, right?
Yup, it's great.
Yeah.
It was a fun time. It was one of the best concerts I've ever been to.
Yeah.
They're
fun. Kenny Rogers was originally a stand-up bass player.
Yes.
I actually found a old ad of his from like the 50s or 40s that I showed Victoria because I couldn't find it. I wanted to order it because he used to sell how to play guitar.
Yeah.
And it was called Quick Picking and Fun Strumming with Kenny Rogers. And I found the ad on my show.
From Alfred Publishing.
I think it was.
I know this to be true because I worked for Alfred Publishing as a kid. They were on Sepulveda over there by Castle Golf. And all the women from the band I was telling you earlier, Three Dog Night, the wives worked there. So as a kid, I thought, well, I want to work there. So the family was so amazing. They gave me a job and they paid me during the summers just what they would pay an adult to do the switchboard. I'm like 12 and 13. So every summer I worked there until I was like 17. And Kenny Rogers, I proofread his book and John Davidson's and all these books that it was crazy because I'm just a kid, you know? But they gave me a really good opportunity.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun.
That is.
Yeah, that's really cool.
This world of music is all a big circle, you know?
Well, people don't realize how, you know, people get their start and how they have to survive before they make it.
I mean, you
see a rock star, a country star, doesn't matter, but you see someone in the light and you're like, wow, they lived such a great life, but they don't realize where they had to come from to get there.
Right.
I feel like at least, like, you know, now, unfortunately, there's a lot more. I think the internet kind of detracts from the just the level of musicianship it would take to be successful back then, or business to a degree too, because now it's like social media plays such a huge role, and like you just have to like learn how to use programs. It's sad.
Right.
And it, what real star of that, you know, quality is going to do something like that?
Yeah.
No, and you had to have enough songs for an album.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And they had to just have like one.
You couldn't drop an EP on Thursday. Yeah. You had to drop the entire album.
Yeah. Well, they have 45s, you know.
Yeah, that's but, true, that, but that was usually part of an album
package,
yeah. Right?
Yeah, because it's like a promo thing, right?
Correct.
And I don't think the kids today understand how much work it really does take to be an entertainer.
Right.
And the grind on the road and all of it. Because I even know some sons of famous stars have gone on the road with them who quit. Because it's like, it's a job.
Oh.
And it's one of the hardest jobs ever.
It is very
really good. Is.
That's why you get vitamin shots, everybody.
Vitamin B12.
I learned about this.
Yes, true.
Or you just drink a lot of Jack Daniels like Frank Sinatra.
I don't know if that worked out for him.
I don't think so. I ditched him one time at dinner when I was 18 at Chasen's, Frank Sinatra.
Yep.
Yeah, I couldn't
She's
help
got
it.
A story about
I had
everyone.
To leave him at dinner. I still get yelled at about that sometimes.
Yep.
So somebody that I know very well, Billy Vera from Billy Vera and
the Beaters.
Yep. He had just signed his Capitol deal, mm-hmm. and he got his first big check, and he didn't know where to go in L.A. He's from New York, and he ended up at Chasen's by himself, and he sees Frank Sinatra holding center court. And he says to the maitre d', can you just ask Frank Sinatra if I can come over and say hello? I just signed a deal. Frank waves him over, gets a chair for him, and sits down, orders some food. He goes, Billy, I love your phrasing. I love the way you do it. He goes, dude, I actually thought you were black after I heard your first two songs. I didn't realize you were a white guy.
Wow.
Right? And he goes, and Billy Bear says, man, I'm just loving this. Frank Sinatra.
Frank knows who he is.
Frank, yeah. And he goes, loving on me in front of all of his friends. He goes, and then all of a sudden, Frank looked at his buddies, goes, let's go, guys. And they all walked out. Check was still on the table.
I was wondering if the check was on the table.
Check was still on the table.
There you go. Well, he probably didn't do that on purpose, really. He bought my Aunt Kitty. He bought my Aunt Kitty his
He did, unfortunately.
I guess for
I
his
feel
time.
Like men only, yeah, only know.
For his time. I don't know what to say. Well, I ditched him there, so what can I say?
Yeah. No, he did that to Billy Bear. That was like his little hazing ritual, you know.
Sweet.
There
Gotta
you go.
Love guys.
They do some things.
And then here's another thing. Billy Vera will tell you the most money he's ever made in his life were on two things, and neither of them had to do with his records. One was the theme song to King of Queens, and the other is AM/PM. He's the voice that says, too much good stuff.
Oh, wow.
That's hilarious.
That is funny.
Well, Kenny Jr. did.
I know.
Extra, extra.
And
I was like, who is the girl in the background? He's like, oh, it's my business partner's daughter. Because I was going to get him on that. That's a big
one. He says it's him.
He's not all of it. There's the girl voice is not him.
Oh, wow. No, he's trying to act like he... I thought he hit that note, man.
That's Mikey Jitsi's daughter.
I thought he hit that note.
At least I heard that was Mikey Jitsi's daughter.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was him hitting that note.
Well, some of it is. But another,
is that still him today?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
That's mailbox money.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a lot of money.
Private school money.
That's a lot of money.
That's what Billy Vera says. He goes, man, that AM, PM, every day I go to the mailbox and there's money in it.
Oh, yeah. Well, the checks come in different quarterly. But he also did Entertainment Tonight, the John Tesh theme. He redid it with the horns in it, so he gets a reorchestration.
Wow.
So, you know, every country, every time it's played.
Must be nice.
Yeah. Well, it's how we can afford him. Take care of himself and all of whoever else. All of the children.
He goes, the golden goose is dead, kids. And we're like, no, it's not.
That's what he says to
us. Voice
Don't believe it.
Voiceover work is amazing.
He's dead.
I'd like to get more of that, actually. I did do it for a while, but he used to hire me a lot.
I used to be friends way back with Lauren Dreyfus, who is Richard Dreyfus's brother.
Oh, wow.
And companies would hire Richard Dreyfus for all their voiceover work, and he would send Lauren because they sounded exactly alike. And that's how Lauren made his living.
Oh, that's cool.
Awesome. There's a lot of like Hollywood stories like that. Tom Hanks' brother is very similar to him. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I don't sound like anyone. I feel like we all individually sound very different.
Don't, we're not. You don't have a sister who's
Thank God.
I don't know.
Well,
whoever.
Yeah, I got B room.
But I mean that's
I know what you mean. Yeah.
You need somebody famous.
You're not Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah.
What are you supposed to sound like?
I don't know.
Yeah, although when I did host Country Music Television, they asked me if I had an accent, and I sure did at that moment.
Oh, yeah.
And I brought Victoria, and I got her the job, too, and she had to stand there and be a little cute girl and talk with a southern accent.
Sheila, do you sing?
I do. Back in the 80s, I actually had a deal I was supposed to do, and I didn't do it with this other girl because she turned out to be a nightmare. But I don't like to do it by myself. I like to be with other people. It's just probably an insecurity. I think if I would have sang more in the studio than doing my Jane Fonda workout, then I probably would be a better singer.
My ex-wife was on those videos.
Oh, really? I used to take that to Lion Shirt, Kenny Rogers Studio. That's where I met Kenny Jr. was there. But anyways, and I would go in the other room and do my workout so I would stay in shape so I could get all my jobs. Right. While everybody was, you know, the studio sessions are all night long.
Yeah.
And then I'd come in for my moment of like, hey, let's take the guitar in the bathroom. Let's do this. I want reverse cymbals here. You know, so, yeah.
Studio musicians make a ton of money. You could have been... Yeah,
they don't though.
They do.
But
they do.
There's a whole documentary about studio musicians getting written out of everything.
I don't care about that documentary. Those are not the ones that make the money.
The ones I did.
Triple scale, double scale. Kenny Rogers actually hired me to do We Are the World. So yeah, because he's like, you know, come in here, Sheila. He was really good about that. Sing this part.
Give you a blanket?
Because you dubbed over the singers because you know everybody's not on key, everybody's not in tune. So we went back in and did the We Are the World. And
I forget who's. I think he may have been Sambles's friend, African American guy named Prescott. He used to come in once in a while.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yes,
drummer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I know who that is actually.
As a matter of fact, he makes so much money doing studio work. He's got that big house out in Seeming.
Oh, you make a fortune if you're in the right clique. Yeah. Which I was in that clique as a kid, and you know, it's interesting. Sometimes you don't think that those ships are never going to sail. You know, you think they're always going to be there in the harbor. And you know, studios became something that were at home. I like analog a lot because I like the way it feels. There's still some good ones in Nashville. I've been to studios all over the world. I've worked with all kinds of people in the studio, even James Brown and Tommy Ray Brown. You know, working with them, doing their music. But it wasn't until Janie Lane said, hey, you can get a part of this song. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Because I would write songs with Rudolph because Rudolph speaks German. I'm like, no, you can't say that. I would rewrite the words, you know. And he goes, oh, okay, thank you. And he'd go, oh, you're the fifth member of the band. Ha, ha, ha. Well, I wish I was the fourth member so I could get a check. But nobody told me that. So, you know, I learned.
Did they count Kotak as a member?
No.
Unfortunately, had to let him go. But he was a member for a long time. I love James. You know, Victoria grew up around James and his kids and Athena.
But he wasn't like an equal member. He was like a hired.
He was an employee.
He was like that bass player.
Sometimes Paolo. You got to give somebody just a job because if you give them partnership, they can't handle it.
Well, what's his name? Sambora and his partner. What's his name?
John Bon Jovi.
John Bon Jovi treated everybody else as employees. Only
an asshole. I went on a date with him before I had.
Of course,
her.
You did.
John Bon Jovi, and he gave me 4 front row tickets to his concert, 1989.
I know this story.
I was working on Dick Tracy. How do you know it?
Because you told it to me.
And her dad loved John Bon Jovi, and so I gave 2 of the tickets to him and his friend, and 2 to my cousin. And I just wish I could see his face when he looked in the front row, and it was not me. It was two dudes with long hair and 2 girls. But I had to work, and I just never want to talk to him again.
Yeah.
He was an asshole.
Yeah, he and Sambora treated the entire band as employees. Yeah.
Now, Sambora is a really nice man. He did my James Brown documentary, and what a sweet person he is. And what an amazing singer.
Right.
But I don't think he would have made it without the asshole. they complimented each other.
Not my type of music. I'm a 70s guy.
Not mine either. Yeah. I thought it was very corny and stupid.
That was the pop rocket that came out of the 80s, sort of, kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Alan Grudman, I remember, was their attorney in New York who introduced me to John Bon Jovi on that date.
I like ELO. That's right.
Yeah, ELO is awesome.
I mean, you have all these great stories.
Jeff Lynne invented the Moog synthesizer.
Jeff Lynne, again, I'll say it. I said it last episode. He has to be protected at all costs. He's my favorite person alive right now, musician-wise.
Okay. And a great producer. Is Matt Allen one of the greatest?
Favorite.
One of the greatest producers. Because Prince is gone. When Bowie died, I died. So I'm actually a ghost.
Sad.
And Jeff Lynne is all I got left. So.
And they're coming out with a new album.
He better protect himself.
Yep. And Brian Wilson mentally died a long time ago. I love that man so much.
We had him on Outlaw Radio about a month ago.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it was a call-in. He didn't come into the studio.
God bless.
He sounded lucid on a couple of sentences, and then he sounded way out there in a couple of others.
I saw him 4 times 2 years ago, in a span of every month I saw him in different places. Yep. He played the OC Fair. He played a whole bunch of places.
Was John Stamos playing drums?
No, he wasn't in it.
Oh, good.
Sheila, thank you for coming back. It is always a pleasure. I am just fascinated every time you come into this studio, and I really appreciate the time and effort you did to come in.
Thank you.
Victoria, you picked the best guest. Thank you so much.
I do what I can.
You're a heck of a co-host. And in this last minute, let's say it again. Go to the Pineapple Hill Saloon. It is a wonderful neighborhood place. We have to support the neighborhood places. Stop going to Olive Garden. Stop going to Outback. So you don't need a blooming onion.
Ew.
What you need is a patty melt over at the Pineapple Hill Saloon. We will see you next week. Enjoy the rest of the week, everybody.
You're listening to OK Boomer with Ralph Odierna and Victoria Greenwood, only on LA Talk Radio.